Dr. Kreiner Cash is superintendent of Buffalo Public Schools, a district of about 33,000 students and the second largest district in New York State. Thank you for joining us today on WBFO.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
All right, so I want to get started by discussing this new study that came out just this week from the American Academy of Pediatrics and Children's Hospital Association that found that something close to 100,000 children across the country tested positive for the virus in the last 2 weeks of July. There's also been other studies showing that Black and Hispanic children, if they contract the virus, are more likely to develop severe symptoms and require hospitalization than their white peers. So, in your role as superintendent of this large urban district, what's your best guidance to parents and students right now as they think about sending their children back, you know, potentially to school buildings?
Well, that's the big question of the hour in my mind. I've been worrying about that for months now. I'm very familiar with both studies. The latter study in particular impacts Buffalo Public Schools. We have 83% of our children are children of color and come from high poverty, high need backgrounds and families as far as income, as far as some of the health conditions that underlie many of our families. They're exactly the kind that COVID likes, it seems to. And so it's a big, big worry for me. And that's why I'm not comfortable at this time for having children come back into schools in person. We absolutely want our children and families to continue for the children's education. I think there's been a lot of COVID loss, as we call it, during this time, unintentionally, but it's just the reality. And the longer children for Buffalo Public Schools go without the supports, the many, many supports that they receive on a daily basis from our many, many professional educators. Many of our students have 6-7 specialist roles working with them in a given day beyond just the classroom teacher. And without all of that support that they normally would have, I just worry on end. Now, having said that, that's why we have to be even more, I think, cautious in our reopening plan, our reopening protocols, the trainings that we will expect of our staff and our parents, the expectations, very strict expectations that we are already contemplating, and why we're taking such time to hear so meticulously from our parents, from our teachers, from all of the groups that will be affected. We want to hear from you. We want you working on some of this, not so much the parents, but, you know, teachers, principals. We have 10 labor employee groups. We have all of them at the table. Despite the some of the talk to the contrary, they've all been at the table, and they're going to continue to be at the table. So what I want to know more than anything is whether we're remote or whether we're in person, because some families will need to have their children in person at school. We expect that. We anticipate that. And we can accommodate that up to a percentage of our full population. A quarter of our population that needs to come in person, we can accommodate that.
Okay, I wanted to ask you about that. And we certainly are going to talk about public engagement on the draft reopening plan and more. But first, you said not being comfortable with students back in the building. But it full. Is still an option for full in person. Okay, so I was going to say, it is still
got it. Right.
Not a full reopening, right. So it's my understanding that parents now have a deadline to select whether they would like to go with a hybrid in-person and remote option or the remote-only option. Is that right? And can you confirm the deadline for me for parents?
Well, it's what we're trying to do. I don't like the sound of a deadline in a pandemic. It just doesn't sound flexible enough for me. What we're trying to do is sooner than later, and we still have some work to do ourselves. So after this Friday and by Monday, Tuesday of next week, we should have a clearer distillation of what these plans will look like. what I've learned and what I understand and I agree is that this plan is too big in and of itself to digest for the average parent, teacher, staff member. We have to distill this. So staff is working on what we call summary pages. I think in 2-3 pages, it will show in column form, this is what remote learning only will look like. This is what it will look like. And then here's hybrid, at least of what we're thinking so far. And that's been changing, by the way, colleagues, almost daily because of input and concerns. And then over here is full in-person summary of what that would look like for your child. And that way, now parents have a real option to actually choose from. I felt like we were putting them under a superfluous deadline of August 21st, when if they didn't understand what their options were. And so we're trying to clarify that and distill it down into a real, real good, if not graphic, a concise, verbal, 3 columns. Here's your choices. Here are your options.
Okay.
And that kind of choice.
Okay.
So we would like that to be August 21st.
So it would be August 21st. Because I was just going to say, I thought you said we're not holding them to the August 21st.
I'm shooting for as close to that as possible because we're coming up on September 8th. If some need another week, we can handle another week. You see? So it's fluid. It's fluid. But the sooner we get it back, the more granulated we can plan. It's a large school district. It's the second largest in the country, in the state. And we need to be able to start planning because bus routes, transportation, sure, all of that follows, you know, daily scheduling. The sooner we know who's going to be doing what.
Okay, so you are looking to hear from some parents, sooner rather than later, whether they are voting for a hybrid model or whether they're selecting a hybrid versus in-person model.
And I'm going to meet with another one later today, and I'll ask them what kind of timeline would be most helpful for you. Most are telling me, and I can't say most because I haven't heard from everybody, but the most I've talked to are saying they'd like to start remotely, and then they like this idea of a 2-week timeline where we go into our schools with select staff and really pressure test a day in the life for all the student populations that we'd be serving in a given day, whether remote, hybrid, or in person, and take 2 weeks to do that, have all the training associated with all of that, and have the testing and assessment. When I say testing, academic, social, emotional learning testing occur at that time by appointment with families who would want to come in, see what we've done, what it will look like, and then that will help continue to inform their confidence in whether they want to send their child back or not. And just at least understand how remote's going to work, how hybrid's going to work, and how in-person would work.
Okay.
Get all of that understanding in their appointment in those 2 weeks.
You mentioned a few minutes ago, you mentioned the quarter capacity. We have room for about a quarter. Is that a quarter of all students at any given time on a certain day, or we can only take a quarter back in school buildings at all this fall?
Safely. The issue always comes back to safely. And even then, I can't guarantee zero risk. I can never get this to zero risk.
Right.
This is a completely different algorithm for me than it would be during so-called normal health times. But somewhere between a quarter and a third, we've talked about 10,000 students across 60 schools, and we've done the overlay on that and what that would look like per classroom, given the architectural footprint of all of our schools, which we've looked at very carefully through our consultant, Canon Design Architects. They've done that overlay for us, and we can very reasonably schedule 10,000 students in across the district and using all of our facilities and keeping at 6 foot apart, probably 8 to 12 students even in a class is what we could do depending on the population. We do a smaller ratio for high need students and middle and high school students. We would be looking at maybe 8, 12, Even some of our large classrooms, depending on the subject, could accommodate 15. We don't see much going past 15 students in a classroom.
Okay.
And if it's an in-person learning.
All right, and I'm sorry, that 10,000 students across the across the district and the 60 schools, is that on any given day? Well, so 10,000 students could come this day and then a different 10,000 students, or 10,000 students only are going to be the ones coming to school physically?
No, that was, I'm sorry, I wasn't clear. That would be just for if people were choosing as one of these three broad bucket options to come back full in person 5 days a week, every day, every week of the school year, 52 weeks, 36 weeks, then we could accommodate 10,000 children.
Okay, well, if it was full in person, got it.
That's right, up to. Now, my staff's gonna fuss at me a little bit. We know a quarter, but I'm saying I'm pushing it to a third because
a
quarter,
third.
Yeah.
Understood.
Yeah, up to a third.
So, say I'm a parent. I am not a parent, but say I'm a parent and I'm thinking about what's best for my child this fall. I think a hybrid model is best. I'm okay with my child going to school a couple of days, and I like the sound of the Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then Tuesday, Thursday for the second week in the cycle. Am I guaranteed that option, or might I be told, like, we don't have room and your child is going to be remote only? How are you prioritizing who will fit into the hybrid model? Or is there room for everyone in the hybrid model?
Oh, that's a great question. I really like that question. There's got to be room for everybody in that model, because if everybody chose the hybrid, that's what my directions have been to staff, is to plan for everybody. And then how would they come? So yes, the short answer is everybody, if they chose the hybrid, the sooner we knew that, then we would plan for a hybrid of 33,000 children. And that's why it's a little bit of a moving target and fluid, because we haven't heard from everybody about that yet. But okay, we are planning for everybody, not everybody on Monday, not everybody on Wednesday, but all 33 would fit into whatever the hybrid that evolves comes up. And we would not tell a parent, you're going to get kicked out of that because we don't have room and all that. No, we're planning for once they choose that and they feel okay, they've made their child care arrangements and able to because they want their child to have some socialization and be back with children and be back with their teachers, all of whom miss them and know we need to be with them and continue their academic and social emotional growth, we'll accommodate that. But the sooner we know, the better, because then that buses and schedules and all kind of, believe it or not, logistics and operational details would then need to come to flow after we know what numbers we have for that.
So how are parents making that choice? Is there a survey out? How are they supposed to let the district know their preference?
There is a survey out. I don't have it right on me. Let me see if I could quickly put my hands on it.
Okay, no problem. Just want to make sure we share that information with our listeners.
Oh, here it is. Organized chaos on my desk, you know that. So to provide feedback is www.buffaloschools.org/feedback. And your views on the reopening plan itself is buffaloschools.org/reopen. So
okay.
So both are buffaloschools.org, you know, with the www, mm-hmm. Dot reopen for your comments, ideas, suggestions about reopen. And then there's a specific feedback loop here that is slash feedback. Now, Eleanor can tell you afterwards, Kyle, but there's also a survey that is out and it's on our website up front. And that may be a different kind of a thing. And that survey very clearly asks you to choose one of the three options. We'll gather data from that. It won't be your final thing to choose from. It's not the only time frame, but it's one that's open right now. We'd like you to respond to it.
Okay, sounds good. One thing I'm very curious about with either the hybrid and the all remote option, back in the spring when I was talking to students, there seemed to be a lot of variability across different teachers in terms of how much live instruction was taking place or even pre-recorded instruction, really. And there was one student, and something that he said really stuck out to me, and he said, you know, if it's almost more like college, and if the teacher can get back to you, they get back to you, and if they can't get back to you, they can't get back to you. And it just sort of struck me as like more of like a coworker situation, where that might happen with some of my colleagues in the newsroom, where we get overwhelmed and we can't always get back to everybody. So I'm wondering, you know, how is the district, exactly how much instruction is going to be required from teachers, like for each student? And I know it will vary by grade level. I think the working draft plan says something like, expectations will be established for the amount of synchronous and asynchronous instruction to be provided in each student's scheduled day. So are those conversations in the works? How much instruction can students be expected to get?
Absolutely. And this has just got the advanced draft of that from staff based on some of the meetings and the feedback they're getting. I mean, I think it's very important. That first spring semester, last spring, we've never, ever been through this. I thought the commendation part was that we shifted quickly. We made an attempt to provide remote instruction, and we stuck through it through the rest of the year. One of the highlights was we were able to get seniors who just like you said, a high school student who was about to not stay engaged, we kept them engaged. I made that a priority. They got hotspots, they got laptops. I went to work on those instructors for all of our seniors. I said, do not give up on these kids. You've got to stay engaged, and you've got to put in the time for them to pass the courses they need to graduate. And we graduated 75% of our students. That's extraordinary, given our historic rates in the 60s, low 60s. So I'm very pleased about that effort. It shows it can be done. But what we also learned, some of the lessons learned from the spring, was that it was very jagged and disparate from school to school, from teacher to teacher, from developmental stage to developmental stage. Some teachers were very innovative and stayed every day lesson and then follow up with what we call the asynchronous parts of it, homework and research projects and things, readings. And they were terrific. They were terrific. They were like an exemplar in my mind. And in others, there were hardly any contacts made. And some students were frustrated over that, and it wasn't their fault, so to speak. That was our fault. So we've been working hard to even that out and make sure that we are very connected with our students. The students get what they need on their end from us to the best of our resource ability. And then that's why we wanted all of our union groups, labor groups at the table, because I want to know from them, what does a day in the life in your mind need to look like? Because if you continue to allude to your contract, which I'm hearing a lot of alluding to contract about working conditions and safety, we get that. We certainly understand and agree with that. But your contract also says that you provide 7 hours and 15 minutes of instruction, or you get your breaks. And so maybe an hour less than that, go back to 6 hours and 15 minutes of instruction. So what's that going to look like for you, colleagues? How are you going to provide that? Because we want to hold you accountable to that. We think that's fair. We think that's what our students need and require, especially given some of the inequities that we saw in the spring that was occurring for our students. And we think that going forward with the loss that we have already anticipated, and once we measure that in the first couple of weeks of school to see exactly what it is, they're going to need our support more than ever, more than ever. So it can't be less. It needs to be more, but up to your contractual agreement. So it can be asynchronous and synchronous up to, my expectation is 6 hours and 15 minutes a day, and then you get an hour of break. But your total time is 7 hours and 15 minutes per day.
Dave, were you going to jump in there?
I apologize, Kyle. I have to leave for a different meeting.
Understood. No problem.
But the one area that I did want to have you address, Dr. Cash, do you have any numbers about how many students just disappeared from the system, maybe because they didn't have internet or because they didn't want to be a part of the remote learning experience? What are your concerns going forward about truancy and people just kind of opting out?
Well, at the end of the day, you know, we're going to do our best to track that. And we have a system that we have established to track that. And we found that that was the case. But that's been the case all over the country. It's not just a Buffalo public case. You'll find, depending on a lot of factors, you might not be able to contact a student like we did pre-COVID. Don't forget, in New York, because a lot of the virus was raging here early, people were leaving in droves out of New York. I don't know about Buffalo, but out of New York City, people were leaving and they haven't come back. And so there are people that took their families and went to live with relatives. They moved all over the country because it started in New York so badly. So, and then people were getting kicked out of the system. Their phone, because of bills, they couldn't pay the phone bill. Certainly the internet bill became way secondary in terms of the bills that needed to be paid. So we lost contact with a lot of our families. And that number in the thousands, 33,000 to 3,500 is about my estimate of what we need to get updated contact information on, somewhere between 3,000 and 3,500 families and students, to answer your question directly. But the more that families have in us, the more they hear about what their options are, I think they'll make good choices. And we're just going to try to do the best we can without guaranteeing full safety or complete zero risk safety. If you want to hear in one word what my answer is, I think we need to wait until there's a solution. Wait until there's a vaccine. Wait until the United States isn't leading the world in new cases every day. Isn't leading the world in lack of per capita like we are. There's a lot of concerns and questions that I have about this virus that we don't know about. And it's just a risk to just take our school children and go right back into it. That's a big, big risk. And I don't blame anybody who doesn't want to take that forward. They don't think that's right to do that to children.
Dr. Cash,
so we try to balance that with what their needs are educationally with what their public health concerns are. That's the balance and that's the challenge of what we have to do here.
All right. So I want to follow up on what you were just saying, actually, about how you feel it really would be best if we need the country to be in a better place with a virus, right? I mean, we clearly don't have a national strategy for the pandemic. Numbers are continuing to rise in a troubling way across the country. Are you speaking when you say that, like, we need to wait, we need a solution? Are you speaking more in a personal capacity or as a superintendent?
I'm sort of speaking both. And let me say what I mean by that. I'm speaking about it because of the risk that I know is disproportionate for the population and families that we serve here in Buffalo Public. And I just think about it as my own children or my own grandchildren who also are children of color, regardless of the means, I just wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it except for remote. I would do a remote option. But start talking about bringing folks in, and then if there's one case, just one case, because that's why I closed sooner than the governor wanted us to close, if you recall, kind of back with the other Erie One BOCES superintendents. They were holding on. Cases aren't too bad. But I saw the tsunami coming. All the evidence was there. And yet we were trying to hold on, because nobody had said to not do it. I said, we're going to do it because I don't want one case. Why wait till a case not knowing this disease? And that was back in the spring. same way. In fact, I feel more strongly about it as an educator and as the leader ambassador of the school system than I did then, because the situation is actually worse now. It's worse because we've never gotten the virus under any semblance of control. And we're hard-headed about even trying to follow any rules or protocols to bring it under control. We know what to do, but we're not doing it. We're not doing it anywhere. See, stay at home unless you need to go out. If you go out, wear a mask, stay socially distanced, wear gloves for all those touch spots to protect you, and go and shut it down. That's how you bring it under control. And test. We have to test regularly, contact trace, and all of those things so we know where it is, who is affecting, and what the real number is. Because again, all of those indicators that I've been saying, that's what I've been doing mainly as a superintendent, is how does this thing work? What are we learning? What's emerging? I stay in close contact with epidemiologists and pediatricians who are advising me personally on this, as a professional on this, if I need it. And we've undercounted, Kyle, probably 10 times, up to 10 times undercount from whatever the count is. It may be exponentially higher than that. I've been asking for some time, for example, what is exactly the count of cases and deaths and serious illness, extended stays in the hospital for the Buffalo Public School zip codes? Not Erie County as a whole county, not even Western New York. Those, when all that data gets put together, it lowers the count for Buffalo. It doesn't give you a true count, because we know across the country, cities are driving some of these numbers for the whole state. And then Buffalo obviously would be the one driver for region because of our population makeup in terms of the health issues and the things that we know statistically are happening. So let me know what that is by zip code. What is it? So that I know whether we might be above this statistical number that the governor says we need to watch in order to make the decision to close or stay open. And I don't know what it is. We need to find that out. So that's a question I would like you to help me with. Ask that question. And I'm going to ask it as well of the public, of the Department of Health here in Erie County.
Yeah, you know, I have been spending quite some time with the data in Erie County and across Western New York, because I'm actually coordinating a COVID-19 project for the station.
Excellent.
I think that information, at least for Erie County, and I don't know it off the top of my head, but I do think you can view on their map, on their map interface for the data, I think you can view by zip code, but I haven't done those tallies
early
myself.
On, I know that was true. I'm hoping it's still true. But again, Kyle, what's the accuracy of that? Because it's only as good as the reported data you get. And another thing we're learning, Kyle, is that a lot of minority families, Black and Brown families, for different reasons, for stigmatization issues and reasons, for job loss potential, if it's found out that you have COVID or COVID symptoms and you report that to an employer, you know, what's going to happen to you? And then for some of our families, of course, the whole issue of deportation, you know, just giving any information at all, and then you finding out where I am, who I live, where I live, I'm afraid of that. And as you know, we have a high, what we call new American population in our school system. So at best, it's under, the numbers are understated and undercounted. But having said that, that's where my worry comes in terms of just going back in person and saying, oh, we're great, we're gonna be perfectly, and everything, don't worry about it and so forth. That I cannot promise. And that's what I'm trying to work on as we try to work through this as a country. We know, we've heard that there'll be a resurgence possibly here in New York, It is a resurgence right around September, October. Why start in September and October? Now you may stop starting, and then you shut down again within a matter of weeks. And was that a good risk, you see? And we've been kind of left on our own with all of that, Kyle, which is surprising to me, frankly. Not surprising, but it's disappointing that school systems would be asked to solve these things on the backs of our children and our teachers. So I'm a bit concerned about that. But what I can promise is that we have improved our remote learning capacity. Our training efforts and trainings have all been established, and teachers are to be, you know, they're ready to be trained in these improvement areas to provide remote learning. And I want our families then to pick up their devices and make sure that they have it in their family household for their children. The one challenge that I would like the city or big business to think outside the box and maybe help us with on this is turn Spectrum News or Spectrum into a utility, you know, like some of these larger cities have done, so that we can provide remote Wi-Fi internet access for free to all of our families. If we could do that, I would really be confident, at least that we had done all we could do to provide this access to our families. That's the equity divide. Sure. that I haven't been able to solve yet.
I know,
but
that
I'm working on it.
Okay, I was going to say, I know that Spectrum offered a free option for 30 days or 60 days. There were some issues with that. Right. Yeah. So you're talking with Spectrum now about a possible extension or another option?
Yes, we're talking about it. Hasn't gotten down to free yet. I think we're at $29.99 a month. And M&T and some other businesses are stepping up to help us maybe foot some of the cost of some of that. So there's a lot of partners that have said, what can we do to help? And I definitely appreciate that kind of Buffalo support that we're getting from private entities and public. And that's what it's going to take, frankly, for us to solve this in the short term, in the near term.
Do you know what percentage of students still lack internet access at home?
As I said, we have a survey out right now. And what I thought the numbers are in these materials that I've been reading is that we don't know for sure is like 3,500, something in that neighborhood.
Okay. So I want to talk about, you mentioned starting the school year, getting into September. Let's talk about this phased in approach. I'd like to hear from you a little more about what the first 2 to 3 weeks of school will actually look like, both for teachers and for students, if the district moves forward with this phased in approach that is included in the appendix of the working draft.
Yes. So again, one of the things, this was an idea that I had seen as I was researching these plans all across the country as they were emerging. And it just seemed like instead of becoming embroiled in a battle with all of our labor employee groups, they need to be fair and thoughtful for everyone, for parents, for teachers, teacher aides, principals, all of us who need to work out what we say a day in the life in school. What would that look like? You need time to do that. Couldn't do it over the summer because we have summer school going on. We had a lot of summer programs and camps going on that were taking up staff time, even though they were remote, most of them. That was not being able to be the case to have every teacher focused in on this. But if we could take 2 weeks and be at the school site and be together safely with principals and teachers, if they think it through, they can figure that out of what it looks like per school and who to call in on what days and when. All of our support staff is doing all the cleaning. They've got decals and signage and PPE equipment has already begun to come in in mass. So we have all of that, but we need time to plan that all out. The safety protocols first and foremost. People are saying it's not safe. Well, we don't know. You don't know until you come in and make sure you get your feedback in to see if it will be safe. Because that's sort of idiosyncratic to the individual. See, some individuals may want more PPE. Some may say, just give me a mask and gloves, and that's what I need. So that would be one of the major things that would occur. Another piece that would occur would be all of this training that is required. There is training off of platform, one platform, not multiple platforms, just Schoology. One teacher just working off of Schoology. And there were multiple platforms going on in the spring.
Mm-hmm. I saw that in the plan, yep.
And that's what was causing some of the, you know, some of the confusion and some of the disparate learning that was going on, efforts that were going on. Even though well-intended, it got too many. One platform and training on that. Another piece would be all going on simultaneously, by the way. It's not 1 week we do this, 1 week we do that. We're doing this, all of this as we go throughout the weeks. But we need to assess, you know, my name is Kyle Mackey. What have I gained during this 6-7 months, including the summer off? And what have I lost? Where is my learning language? I'm 8 years old. Where's my literacy skills? Where is my vocabulary development? What is my social emotional learning status? You know, and we have some really well trained staff that can first detect that and then diagnose that. And it often is invisible. It's not one of the, oh, I'm looking at you and I can see, Kyle, you've been under tremendous trauma. You know, there are things that we do to get at that by having a conversation. So we need to do that either remotely and, again, make appointments. I love the idea of appointments, that if parents really are struggling, have a lot of worry, when I say struggle, worries about what to do. I want to send my child back, but I don't know. I'm worried about his or her. I don't want to lose my child, you know, that kind of thing. Then make an appointment. We'll make it safe. It'll just be you in a room with one staff member to start. And then we'll talk about a virtual tour or a in-person tour so you can see for yourself what we have created here to make it the very best conditions possible for your child to feel, for you to feel, for your child to come.
So
that's what would happen. Those kinds of things would be happening. And then, of course, going over the testing protocols. What happens if a child gets sick? What happens if a staff member gets sick? We'd be going over that protocol, which we have very specifically laid out now with the help and partnership of the Department of Erie County Department of Health. They've given us two very nice protocols that they are going to be responsible for. Here's how we test, and we do that, meaning Erie County Health, and here's how we will contract trace. We have experts to do that, but we need your help, school system, to give us the names of the people for the staff member have been in contact with recently. So that is a very good partnership now that has emerged in just the last week about how we'll do that. And I think that'll be a big assurance to staff and students as well.
Sure, absolutely. They have the contact tracing, you know, infrastructure more set up now, and that makes sense. So the first 2 weeks would really look like teachers getting up to speed on PPE, safety, testing procedures, also professional development, also assessing students during that time with help from support staff, I'm sure. Would there be instruction going on during those couple weeks? Like, when might students start to get instruction?
Well, I had originally wanted because this is a public health crisis, not an education crisis per se, I thought that some of the regulations could be relaxed a little bit in this type of year, like they were so quickly in the spring. And I thought rightfully so. No one hesitated at the State Department to say, look, Regents exams, accountability status, certain other, which you'll see there in Appendix B, I believe, all these other waiver requirements, that happened in the spring. Now I'm simply asking for some of that to carry over, because we're still raging. The virus is still raging. And when folks start to come in from school to school, they're going to be coming in from all over the place. You know, vacations will have started. People start coming back into school. even in the Buffalo for the first time in months. You know, we just don't know that. So, and teachers have been on vacation or out and all around, and we don't know all the places. Not just teachers, staff, everybody.
Right.
Everybody. So,
so at this point, is there a goal day for the start of instructions?
For me, it was 170 days, and it would have been 2 weeks if we got this thing, and it would have been 2 weeks after September 8th. That's what I would like to see.
Okay.
And the reason I say it, because remote, even doing remote, you got to get trained on that to do it effectively. You don't just start that. And during the summer, teachers are required to be paid 1/200th per day of their salary in order to get trained. So if you do it over the summer for 2 weeks, it's quite an expense, and it's an unfunded expense. You see, it's part of these expenses that we won't get when we're trying to save every dollar we can, because we don't know what the governor's still yet going to do to start redoing all of our aid. Yeah, you see what
okay,
I mean?
So that's some of the reason why teachers haven't been able to do more of this training over the summer, because of the also unprecedented budget challenges as well.
They'd have to get paid, and we didn't have that in the budget when we had a $90 million deficit that we had to cut just to get to where we are now, which is what a survivable budget. But we knew, because the governor has been portending it all along, that if we don't get that additional support from the federal government in these different acts that have stimulus acts that they're trying to get to come to the state, then he said he'll cut our aid in a fairly significant way each quarter. So we have to sort of plan for that and leave some placeholders for that as well, at least in our big district, because most of our revenue comes from the state.
Right.
So that's why we haven't had these opportunities to be together to really hammer this thing out. And the first 2 weeks, in my mind, rather than the superintendent's conference days, is what we have every year, is 2 days, one day to set up your classroom, one day to do targeted professional development. That won't be adequate. That's completely inadequate for the condition of COVID that we're in. So 2 weeks made sense starting out. Now, if the state, and I wanted the unions, I wanted the labor groups to join me and request that waiver from the state. If we did that together, I'm sure they would agree to it, because the governor said you got to be flexible with this. Remember, he gave all these sort of broad prints. Teachers got to be happy. Parents got to be happy. Everybody got to be happy. So one of the things that we would need was this waiver from 180 days to 170 days. That's all. That's what I was asking for, 10 days. If we can't get that, we would have to start remotely. But now you're starting with something, again, that the teachers haven't been fully trained in, and they need time to try to perfect that and develop their schedules and develop their own comfort levels with teaching remotely better. And that's why that time is so valuable. And then as we get rolling, you know, we'll get better, and we have better systems in place to track that, to provide immediate support to teachers, to oversee that, hold everybody accountable, and be in better contact with families about what they need if they give us
How soon are you hoping to hear from the state about whether or not the district is granted that waiver?
I don't have the support I need yet for that. I want the labor unions to join me. That's why I've been asking them to get into these meetings and to get into these talks. It's one thing to say what you don't like. It's more productive and constructive to say, hey, here's where we're ready to join you. Here's what we want to do to support it so that we can do our jobs effectively, so that we can do our jobs effectively. And now that's happening this week, Kyle.
Okay.
We're meeting with the principal labor union, the teacher labor union, and the custodial labor union this week.
Okay, great. So I know you have been extremely generous with your time already. I do have one last question. I want to make sure we address this. There has been some, you know, pretty high profile criticism of the district for this reopening planning process. I myself covered a press conference last week in Buffalo, the first parent group press conference. I was not there on Friday. But so the leaders of about 4 out of 5 parent groups have said that, we weren't engaged as meaningfully as we would have liked to been. We also were promised these community meetings that would happen before the plan was submitted to the state. So before July 31st, those meetings didn't happen. And then, of course, there's been criticism from the Buffalo Teachers Federation as well, to the extent where they are saying they're considering legal options about they don't want schools to be reopened with a plan that hasn't been thought out. So I want to address this. What is your response to parent leaders representing groups of parents who say, the plan that was submitted to the state on July 31st really should have had more public engagement before that?
Well, first of all, I would reject the notion that those are high profile parent groups. Those were two parent groups with relatively small followings, very small followings. And
well, there were representatives from four. I also had this exchange with Larry Scott on Twitter.
Not four. There's only five that we recognize.
Yes, but four of those groups were present at the Monday press conference talking about wide-ranging issues.
I want to correct your information.
I was there physically, and there were four representatives from BPTO and special ed. And
BPTO.
They were also at the first press conference, I just want to say. They had a second one as well, but CPAC and BPTO were also at the first one.
But they've been at the table. They've been at the table. It's clear. It's false to say they haven't been involved. It's another question to say, because two of the parent groups said they were involved. They were very adamant about, we were involved. We were included. But you have to understand what that first submission was. That first submission was a assurance submission. It wasn't a full plan to reopen. It was an responding yes or no, basically, to a set of assurances. That's why when the governor said there's 150 school districts that still haven't submitted their plan in the state, he's right. What they submitted was, yes, we will assure that there will be safe distance, social distancing. Yes, we will assure that there will be hand sanitizers in every building. Yes, we will assure that. And it was an 18-page document that we had to submit to the state. And then the state came out with their guidance that backed up those 18 pages of assurances. So our plan to be accepted by the state aligned to those assurances first and foremost, because there wasn't wiggle room around that. We needed to align to those assurances. And then I wanted staff and directed staff to then go further than just that, because that's the minimum requirement, and start to develop a much more rigorous and more complete set of descriptions of what we were intending to do in all of our aspects of our work. It went beyond just that. And I said from the very, very beginning, directed staff, and they will tell you that, make sure that BTF is involved, make sure that our parent groups are involved, make sure that our principal representation is involved, and our teacher aides and assistants. I want them at the table, colleagues, when you develop this plan. That was my clear directive. They assured me that that was occurring weekly, because I update and talk with them about the plan weekly for about a 4-month period. And I had board members at the table who also confirmed that. So for whatever was coming out and wanted to make it, that it wasn't this, it wasn't that, well, that's fine. That's their opinion. Now I'm moving forward. We have about 6 weeks to have input. 17 meetings have been planned. Now talk about what it is you would like to see. Give your feedback, strategize, talk together. I got my best people at the table with you. We had a great parent meeting last night, or at least a great meeting I hear. We changed our format from the first effort on Monday, which I thought was not adequate. Last night was much better, and we'll get better and better. So now let's go forward and do this together. That's what's constructive. Do it together. We all have the same concerns, and I'm here. I did right in my opening message. It's an open, flexible plan for continuous improvement. and let's do it. Let's do it together. So that's the issue on the parents. Parents are with me. The ones that I talked to, I just got the call from BPTO. She said, call me right here on my text. Let's strategize together on how to do this. Most of the parents are asking for a remote option to start that I'm getting. This is coming from the president. And please call me so we can continue to strategize what can work in the best interest of everybody. A consensus plan is what I'm trying to get to. Now, in terms of the teachers, I wouldn't say that this is all of the teachers. I've seen those things, how this works and what NYSET is doing across the state right now. What I'm asking is not so much about what you don't like or what's not acceptable or what you're upset about. What I'm asking is, what are you committing to do to comply with your contractual obligation to educate all of our students, to educate and support all of our children? What are you going to commit to? Whether it's on in person, whether it's remote, whether it's a hybrid of that, what are you going to commit to? And what are your suggestions for improving it to the level which satisfies you as a professional? As a professional, because your professional obligation by law is to educate our children for 180 days out of the school year, for 7 hours a day, averaging. And what are your ideas for that? Because we'll bring our ideas. They're coming now, they're forming now more concretely. I talked to you about that at the beginning. Mm-hmm. With these three columns. Instead of just arguing about it, bring back your solutions and get ready to join us, because you are the district, teachers. What is this, the district? All of us are the district. Parents don't look at it as all these different, we're all the district. And get with us and tell us how you're going to meet your obligations and what I can do, what we can do to make you feel most comfortable for you to do your work. I've always wanted that. I've always been about that. How do we help you do your work best? Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask anyway. Are any of those labor union meetings open to the media or open to the public? Are those discussions taking place? Those are private meetings, right? Between district administration.
Probably at their request. They are, but I have no objection to them being open. If you want to reach out and ask them, do they want to do it in open? That's fine. Do that.
Yeah, I may do that.
I have no qualms about it. Our general counsel might say something different about that because of some law or something. I don't know, but I would love those to be public, and you can hear our viewpoints about it as administration, and then you can hear their concerns and their viewpoints. And the point is to get to yes. At the end of the day, somewhere, sometime, in some fashion, schools are going to be open this year. I do not see this. I do not want this to be a lost year. Cannot be. Even if the COVID is raging, we got to do it remotely then. And we got to do it better remotely. So help me work out what that will look like and how we can do it best to meet the needs of our children. To me, that's not an option. Not an option to sit this year out. We got to do that. We got to do it safely for all the reasons we've already talked about, Kyle.
Mr. Brewer, Phil had mentioned something at that press conference last week about a possibility of a wave of teacher retirements if they don't feel comfortable coming back to the classroom, and they might think, you know, I'm kind of ready to get out of here. Is that something you're worried about or hearing talk of? Or the possibility of teacher strikes? Is that anything that you're hearing at this point?
Well, no, I'm not worried about teachers leaving the profession because of medical reasons or feeling like it's not a safe environment to continue to teach. Every year we get, several hundred retirements every year that we have to plan for. So I'm not concerned about that per se. That's a personal, professional decision that each person has to make. I just lost four principals, for example, to retirement. That I wish would come back, you know? So that happens every year, and it's tough anytime we lose, especially veteran teachers, to retirement. But on the second one, whether or not, what was it that you said, the second?
Teacher strikes. I also asked Phil this, and said it's not something he's hearing at this time, but I just wanted to pose that to
legal.
You.
I don't think it's legal for teachers to strike in New York. I think there's something against that. It's like a law against it. I really do. I'd have to double check that, but I believe it's not legal for them to strike. Or at least if they did, they don't, you know, they won't, it's not like they get paid during a strike or something like that. I can't imagine them doing that with all the challenges that folks are having economically and where the economy is right now for so many people. I can't imagine that that would be an option right now.
Right.
And what I'm simply trying to get to the table, work out what it is that will, I use the analogy of the healthcare workers in the hospital system. You know, that's their job, that's their occupation, that's their work. I wouldn't just thrust you into an unsafe environment, but what I'm asking you is what will be your tolerance point for safety for you? Because you're doing something right now. You're going shopping. People are going shopping at Wegmans. People are going to the hairdresser. They're going to the workout machine. You know, they go work out at the gym. Apparently, and I'm not saying who or where, but people are going to the establishments after hours and so forth. That's why there's a lawsuits going on about it. So people are living their lives. Let's make school at least to the standard that you accept when you go out and live your life.
Yeah.
That's not an unreasonable expectation. I think we're caught up on controversy and adversary as opposed to a working together solution. That's what it's gonna take. There's no way the district has all the answers to something this challenging and globally complex and emerging every day, Kyle. It changes every day.
Yeah.
I can anticipate that even by September 8th, we may have something that says, nope, schools will be delayed until such and such, remote learning only. We're even finding small school districts in the area, Maryville, some others, I don't know, Springville, a couple of, they're going to start remote. A lot of folks are going to remote day by day, going that way because of safety. So this is a fluid issue. I'm looking for a consensus decision among our key stakeholders, and then we will go forward with our very, very best effort to make it happen.
Okay, great. I think we will leave it there for today. Thank you for being so generous with your time. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. Always appreciate your time, too.